is a World Trade Center bound E train. The next stop is 34.
Welcome to the Pubway Podcast. Each episode will showcase a conversation with a leader from the publishing world. If you're working at a publisher, a DSP or SSP, or you're just curious about the media industry and want to sit down and pick the brains of the experts within the publishing space, then this is the show for you. Hello, and welcome to the Pubway Podcast. My name is Tina Iannacino.
And I'm Mike Villalobos. And in today's episode, we have quite a bit to cover. We're going to be covering first-party data, the state of cookie deprecation, addressability, strategies to be aware of over the next 24 months to make sure your business is cookie-proof, effectively.
What are cookies? Nobody's talking about them right now.
No. Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. Oh. And it's my pleasure to introduce Anthony Cacciopoli, who might have more letters in his name than I do, so congrats on that. But I would love for you to kind of introduce yourself and your background so we can frame the conversation today.
Awesome. Thanks, Tina and Mike. My name is Anthony Cacciopoli. My background is pretty much across the entire ecosystem, starting from ad agency to identity graphs and companies and data companies and so on. And most recently, I was just at Business Insider running ad tech and data solutions over there.
Perfect. And I know we've had obviously some prep conversations, and something that you've brought up recently, and I think you've also mentioned this in, on LinkedIn and in some of your posting, but you've highlighted that the mindset and knowledge gap among publishers regarding the upcoming changes in digital marketing. So I guess, how would you suggest publishers bridge these gaps most effectively? So we're getting right into it.
No, it's definitely a hard-hitting question. And there's a lot of even though there's a lot of unknowns, I think the biggest thing that publishers need to do are like a lot of self-reflection in terms of knowing exactly what data they have, right? Because one of the biggest challenges pubs have with their mindset is, you know, there's this mantra of, I have first party data, I'm good. And that's not necessarily, doesn't equate to good data, for instance. So you really have to be like honest with yourself as a company and say, am I truly prepared for this like cookie deprecation, right? And what impacts on all revenue streams does it have on me, right? So as you can imagine, in the publisher space, majority of revenue is advertising driven. So when cookies go away, you have to look at the percentage of your direct versus open programmatic business. And when you look at it from that lens, you have to say, okay, what percentage of my business is at risk when cookies deprecate? So a lot of the knowledge gaps are just kind of understanding what you have, what channels are being impacted, and really educate yourself on what solutions you need to buy, right? Whether it's an identity graph solution, whether it's enrichment, right? Like how are you going to augment your anonymous users with deterministic data, as an example? There's all these other solutions out there. And like even solutions like you guys at CTAG, right? Like contextual and AI solutions that can potentially mitigate certain revenue loss when it comes to open auction as well.
So, I mean, foresight's always good to have, and having the instincts or the wherewithal to move a certain direction is great, but hindsight's 2020, and learning from your own mistakes is probably the best way to go about it. What are some of the things that you learned over the last, say, like at Business Insider or any other role that really helped you progress the advancement of first-party data ownership and also understanding just ways to move and solutions to find just as you go through addressability, identity, deprecation, all the things?
Yeah, so the things that I looked into over the past, let's say, 4 years, right, is how far have we come as you know, an advertising ecosystem and what's staying around and what's not, mm-hmm. and what's being impacted by third-party cookies and what's not. So the things that I looked for were, what are cookieless solutions in all the traditional products like identity graphs, for instance, right? What companies are going to survive in that sense? Because identity graphs at the end of the day, those aren't going away. And it's not like it's competing with like contextual or anything else. It's a foundational type of item. So what I look for is, okay, what identity graphs, as an example, are based on offline data? Because if you're just digital only, right, mm-hmm. and you're relying on just IP addresses and cookies as your coverage, what's called coverage network, right? Like where you have your third-party cookie across all different websites, that's going to go away. So you have to say, what identity companies are founded in offline data that you can bridge the gap or have some kind of crosswalk between offline and online graphs? Think of like Experian, right? Think of Adstra. These companies have a lot of that information on hand to actually sustain themselves in the future as, you know, Apple makes a lot of changes to obfuscate IP addresses and emails and so on. And then obviously in the EU, there's a lot of privacy regulations there that are just like a black and white yes and no of like what you can and can't use. So you have to understand what is available and who's going to actually survive the cookie apocalypse, right? So that's the first thing I would look at. The second type of technology, again, that I've been using that I, you know, looking back at the success rates, is basically what alt IDs and what channels are thriving, right? So if you look at which channels are thriving right now, CTV is huge, right? A lot of content-based publishers, like Business Insider as an example, Wall Street Journal, whatever the case might be, you have to be able to use your audience and target them off-site somehow. Like, use those audiences to target in the CTV space, as an example, because that's where a lot of eyeballs are going. So if you have the ability to think outside the box and think more about, hey, what other channels can I actually monetize on? Because the landscape is changing. So you have to remember, like, people's attention spans are all over the place. So if you want to get technologies, you have to see what works. Where are the people in general? Are they on Instagram? Are they on Facebook? Are they on LinkedIn? Are they on Amazon Prime? Like, where are they? Right? And chances are, they're not going to be on your website longer than a Disney Plus app, right? They're not going to be on your reading your content 24/7. They're going to be probably on Instagram for hours and hours a day. So you have to be able to find them anywhere you want, like anywhere they are. So that's why when you look at what's going to stick around, you need to have a solid foundation. So, and I know this is a long-winded answer, guys, but I promise I have a point. So there's three areas that I'm actually really focused on, which is identity, addressability, and data enrichment. So you need to address your users based on the IDs that are going to be around. So when you look at the growth of email addresses, that is critical to, it's going to be critical to a lot of businesses. Like, think of Trade Desk, for instance. They're spearheading UID too, which is just a derivative of email. So when you look at that and you look at the revenue that a Trade Desk is responsible for a lot of companies, there's a lot of supply out there, right? So if you're looking at Trade Desk and they're saying UID2 is the future, if you look at RampID, say RampID is the future and email is the route to go, think about where you can plug an email into. It's not just news publications, right? It's CTV apps. It's newsletters. Like, anywhere an email is present, right? That's where you can potentially monetize. And it doesn't have to be just programmatic, right? It can be anywhere. So you have to look at the emails and identifier of the future. I'm not saying that it won't change in the next few years or so. It depends on what the government decides to do. But the whole point is this email address is going to be hugely valuable no matter what you do. So you can either capitalize on it or not capitalize on it. If you don't capitalize on it, you're probably not going to, you know, be around for a while. So
yeah, the cookie ship has left the cookie dock.
I think a few episodes back, Keith Petrie brought that up.
Yeah.
And I think the emails are going to be big, but it's also going to be a matter of cleaning up or the unification of emails, because everyone might have, I mean, I have like four or five, Hotmail included.
Yeah.
Shout out to Hotmail, back, a little bit of throwback. And also Yahoo in there as well, a little combination. I think unifying these different emails is going to be important because it has different phases or different parts of your life. Like, one email might maybe be used for your shopping cart and one might be used for business, right? But even with that in mind, I think data ownership is massively important, right?
Yes.
And we'd love to hear from you on what that looks like as publishers shift towards owning that data, but also the hygiene of that data. What are your thoughts on kind of going about it, whether you're advanced, kind of intermediate, or just remedial, just getting started out? Like, what are the different levels you should be aware of in these different parts of, or different phases of adaptation for a publisher?
Yeah, I would say publishers need to start owning more of their data to begin with, right? Because I think right now, what they truly own is just, think of it as user behaviors, right? Like, you only really own what people are reading on your website, and you have to make do with that. So I would say try finding areas of growing your user base to begin with. Like, make it incentivized for a customer to want to keep coming back to your website. So as an example, I want to have content that's not only engaging, but I want the user to repeatedly come back to my website. That's one thing, right? The second thing is I want to add different interactions so I can get a sense of what are they really interested in? Like, what links are they clicking? Maybe I hit them up with a survey on our website to get more interest-based type of information. Think of like your own panels as an example. And if you have that information, you can easily own it and model it for any business application, whether it's audience segmentation or user profiles or trying to grow your subscription based on people who look like already existing subscribers, right? There's a lot you can do with your first party data. You just need to get more of that. Right now, I think a lot of publishers are stuck with just content only and not necessarily other actions they can create for the user's experience to get more information. But, you know, you need to make it really compelling for the user to want to come back. I keep saying user, consumer, customer, but I mean the same thing across all three. But yeah, you want to give them incentives, right? You want to say, what is the value I'm giving to this user? Like, content is not the end all be all. Like, you can read pretty much the same type of article across any publisher when you really think about it. It's just what makes you different, right? What do they want from you? What can you give them that's more valuable to them? Is there like a $10 Starbucks gift card if you fill out a survey on our website? I don't know, whatever the case might be, give them more value, not like just what you think is valuable from your own business head perspective, if you want to call it that, where it's like, oh, I think the user wants to do XYZ on our website. Go beyond that, right? As a human being, what do they want? You know, what are they interested in? And you have to remember that there's a retention issue when it comes to getting the attention of a user. You're like, all right, they're spending more time on social media than my website, or they're spending, you know, they only have like 10 seconds instead of like 5 minutes to read an article, right? You have to kind of understand, like, do they want what I call bite-sized news? Like, is there a way to change the type of content on our website to make it more digestible in a quick way to keep people coming back? Think of like, I don't know if you guys follow like Hollywood Unlocked or like the Shade Room on Instagram or any of those like channels, but like you see like it's bite-sized news, I would call it, right? You read a headline and you're like, oh, this is great. And you look at the script on the bottom and you look at people's comments, right? That's a more fun experience for me as a person who reads content, right? Than just reading articles that take me 5-10 minutes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, granted, I am writing articles on LinkedIn now. I don't expect everyone to read it, you know, spend all that time. But you know, you do want bite-sized news or engagement that makes sense to the user. And social media is like a good baseline for that. So if you look at how people interact, it's really something to learn from.
Sure.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think we even spoke to a company recently. I'm forgetting the name. Apologies. But their whole proposition was they almost are using like ChatGPT to do a summary of an article when you get to the page.
Mm-hmm.
So that people can just like skim it really quickly, get the information they need and leave, which like you can really argue the pros or cons to that experience. How are we going to monetize that? What about time on page? How do you keep the user there? But you also have to be able to like adhere and feed into these tendencies that people
actually
expect.
That's a good point, because I was actually toying around the idea at Business Insider as well. And even with the Axel Springer polls. But there was really, again, it's really early stages, but imagine the summary element of AI. I think it's only a matter of time before there's going to be an ad insertion or related articles where you can potentially monetize that way on a referral traffic standpoint, and also ads within the AI summary feature. So imagine like, you know, here's 3 bullet points about the article. And then there's like an ad in between one of the bullet points and the next one. And then there's like link outs to related content. And imagine you have control of that, right? And you say, okay, there's other properties that we have under our umbrella, so I can refer traffic to other properties. So therefore you keep it within your publisher owned ecosystem.
Leave it to us. I don't want to make money.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that's like, I think that might be a real opportunity in the future. We're just not there yet.
I agree. I really do.
Whatever we can do to take some of the pie away from Bard and all of that, we will try.
And sorry, did I answer the question though? I know I talked for a while, but
probably. Probably. We're riffing. I like it. And I think it also segues great into this next question that we talked about was, are there any specific or innovative solutions that you've already been involved in some of the work you've done prior to help kind of address a lot of these concerns around cookie deprecation, privacy, regulations, ever-chasing, et cetera? It'd just be great to hear kind of your perspective there.
Yeah. So, and because you brought up Keith from Locker earlier, like I was working with him a lot the past, like, I want to say six to eight months. And then also other companies that I worked with, like MetaRouter, for instance, they're a company that's trying to solve for measurement attribution. Mm-hmm. Think of platform ID syncing to say, all right, if a user came from Facebook and created or engaged in a conversion event on our publication, they can potentially tie that together for a measurement solution when cookies.
Is it through macro tracking?
So I'm still getting into the weeds with them. So I'm still talking with them, even though I'm not like, you know, working for an entity right now. But it's basically something that I'm trying to maybe explore or brainstorm with them on other use cases, but that in terms of the how, it's a very server-side approach. But yeah, I would say I recommend checking out MetaRouter too, because they're on the forefront of something. But they're also a startup, so you know how that crazy journey goes. It's, you know, the startup life is the hustle, figuring out your identity and going to market and getting adoption, right? but they do have a pretty solid measurement use case. They just need to test it out. It's better than nothing that we're with right now, right? Like, think of ad servers. From a pure measurement and tracking standpoint, like DoubleClick, or I should say Campaign Manager, Campaign Manager 360 now, I think is what they're called. That's third-party cookie-based. Like, there's no connection between that and Google Ad Manager right now. Although I'm pretty sure Google might be working on something, but that tracking and attribution is going away. So how do you give credit where credit's due? And how do you say this user saw my ad here or clicked on my ad here and, you know, got a conversion? You can't connect those dots anymore. I know clean rooms are trying to get to that point as well, which is another tech I was like exploring as in tandem, which is which clean rooms can help me ingest as much data as I can from both sides, the brand or agency and the publisher, not just email based, right? And how can I get insights to maybe probabilistically, or what I call inferred attribution, to connect the dots and say, let's make our own standard in the future, right?
Sure.
Like, not everything's going to be one-to-one, especially with emails, right? Because not every publisher is going to have emails at the scale of first-party cookies. So it's like, what is the connection point between the brand or agency and, you know, the publisher? You just need to evolve what you can do. And that's where the third thing I look into, which is identity. And that's what I've been evolving or working with multiple providers, including my alma mater, Adstra. So I work for a company called Quali. It got acquired by Adstra, or formerly ALC. So they have a lot of applications that can help with identity or user profiling and identity and like enrichment, adding different IDs that you don't have, right? So if you just have a first party cookie, they can potentially provide an email address as an example. Same thing with Experian, right? They're doing similar, they have similar products as well. So exploring those to say, all right, I want to build a solid foundation or an infrastructure that is future-proof, meaning everything is based on identity, right? You have an identity foundation. It's like the beams of a house, right? So that's one thing that I've been trying to execute. It's a long journey, but let's say publishers are fairly new to the identity space. So when you look at the building an identity foundation, it's very difficult to get it up and running, especially when you need to buy more assets than you do than you actually have, meaning email addresses, alt IDs, etc. So that's another area of focus for me, was how do I build an identity foundation where Anthony, you know, Cacciapoli is the same person for all business units, right? Subscriptions, newsletters, advertising, and so on. And that way you can actually address me anywhere I am, on-site and off-site. So that's the first thing. Then working with data providers on a direct capacity. So imagine you have identity as your foundation. Any data that comes in can be stitched together to a specific identity. And it can even be like your solution as well. So if you have contextual signals and you can tie it back to a unique user, that's just more confidence in that profile. So it's like Anthony Cacciapoli is not just cookie123, he's anthonycacciapoli@gmail.com. He is also in market for a house, although I'm not going to buy a house right now, but yeah, I'm still looking at like Redfin and Zillow and all that. Yeah. So I'm in market for a house. I read technology articles. I'm also an avid Instagram user and so on. Like, you get all these signals and you put it into a profile, it makes it very strong, right? And as a data owner and taking ownership and building out with like these innovative solutions, like, you have that control as a publisher, as a brand. So why not build a solid foundation with different technologies that are solving for the cookieless future? And just do something with it, you know? Like, I don't know. It's just like, I feel like publishers need to...
Quick question, Anthony. So you're mentioning this foundational piece of identity and addressability. What are the core tenets that you see need to be had or put in place as kind of a load-bearing wall, if you will, right? Like, what does that look like for the publisher? Like, what would you, if you were going in as a consultant, and you're like, these are the three things you should focus on before even going forward?
Oh, yeah.
Let us know what they can do.
They need to focus on definitely getting an identity graph for foundational purposes, right? I think there's a lot of silos when it comes to the way publishers historically operated. And again, there's no like harm in that. A lot of companies do have silos, but I'm just an anti-silo person, right? So when you look at cookie deprecation, you have to realize it doesn't affect just like an advertising team. It affects the subscriptions team. It affects the content, like the newsroom, right? Like, how many people are actually going to read their content, because can they even track them? Like, it's, you know, there's like things like that. Like, and again, I'm not saying publishers don't have these kinds of technologies, but most just don't. So if you have an identity graph as your foundation, then you can do a lot of other applications, because it's like, think of it again as the beams of the house. Mm-hmm. If you put the beams like of your house up right now, anything you do is possible afterwards. So the first thing would obviously be identity. Then also, what data can you purchase to enrich your user's profile, right?
Going back to your point on like Experian or offline data to basically enrich the online information you already have.
Yeah, even data providers too, who are pivoting to a more direct approach, right? So think of like a Bambora, right? Mm-hmm. If you get log files from Bambora on like a job title, job function, et cetera, especially if that's your target audience for the content you're writing, you're not like inherently asking your user for the information when you read an article on your website, right? I'm not saying, hey, before you read this article, what's your name? What's your gender? What's your job title? Like, I'm not asking any of that information. Although that could be a possibility to build a panel, which is another item I'll get to of like what they could potentially get as a consultant, if I was a consultant for publishers, right? But think of it as like, if you have identity, you can get enrichment on top of that. So say like, I'm going to buy different data sets and from different data providers who are going to work with publishers in a more direct capacity. And then I can also look at addressability. What other identifiers can I monetize in the ecosystem? So yeah, identity, enrichment, and addressability in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I think that's especially helpful for publishers who perhaps don't have the scale of a Business Insider, a New York Times, a Disney. Mm-hmm. That sort of foundational structure is a really good perspective and advice to give for sure.
A tangent from the conversation of addressability. With the acquisition of Habu by LiveRamp, do you think that's going to be a conflict of interest, being that, you know, LiveRamp has had such a stake within identity and addressability, but then clean rooms are supposed to be fixing the privacy compliance of that? Would love to get your thoughts on what that means for the industry, where you see that shifting from a clean room to actual commercialization standpoint. What are your thoughts?
No, I don't think it's a conflict of interest, because like LiveRamp had their own clean room and they're one of the first ones in market, even back in like 2021, I would say. So they're just acquiring a new tech to do the job for them. I think it's a smart move because, and I'm a firm believer that clean rooms should have identity built in. So it increases the matching capabilities between buyer and seller, or brand and publisher in this case. So I think it's not a conflict of interest. It's definitely a benefit for LiveRamp.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Obviously, that's funny.
Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, like, you're going to purchase a clean room with anyone anyway. And just like you have, like, you know, again, it's going to be like similar to DSPs and SSPs, where you can't just use one.
Yep.
Just because there's, you know, LiveRamp has its own clean room doesn't mean there's other clean rooms that other brands you represent are going to use, right? So, yeah, you're going to need to have multiple clean room relationships. And, you know, Habu is just one of them. So I don't see there being a conflict of interest.
Yeah. And I mean, actually, I would love to even take a giant step back, because I've realized we've referenced clean room 1,000 times. And some listeners might not be as familiar with the terminology because they're setting up their own solutions. How would you explain a clean room to somebody who is not familiar with the concept?
I would simply call it just a privacy compliant black box where a brand and a publisher can send data to, and neither party can see each other's data. Like, it's basically a way to send and receive data without breaking the law, essentially, and while protecting users' data and rights.
Cool.
Not sure why my head doesn't have his blind, but data is I was like, so you're telling me it's matchmaking with a little bit of blindness involved. Got it? Cool. Love that for us.
But they're going to evolve a lot over the next like 3 to 5 years for sure. And they're going to be the driving force for at least insights and measurement, in my opinion. Like, they'll have some solution or capability in the future. But you have to remember, it's going to be a Darwinian future, like survival of the fittest. So whoever has the most data points to ingest in the clean room wins. And also, whoever has the money to pay for clean rooms is also going to win.
Totally. And I mean, most of our conversation so far has been very publisher centric, but as you just mentioned, brands within the clean room situation, and you do have experience on the brand and agency side, how would you maybe recommend brands and agencies be more mindful of how they're working with publishers in these new areas as we're changing the landscape in real time?
Agencies have, like, it's funny because it's like a double-edged sword. Because as you've seen over the past like decade, agencies have been shrinking or acquiring or pivoting. Like, they need to find a new value prop that's different from their original one, which is like incentivized relationships, because that's not really going to exist anymore. So what they need to do is pivot to a more innovative approach. So they should be advising brands on what to use in the future, like clean rooms, and also talk with their publishers. Like, they've had to work with the same, let's say, like 20 publishers over and over again for most campaigns. So you have to talk with your publishers and ask them the questions of like, how are you guys innovating for the future? And they have to pick the ones that are most transparent and ready for testing new solutions, especially when cookies deprecate. So I would advise brands and agencies to just work together to see who's truly ready and who's not selling like smoke and mirrors, and then build those relationships from scratch almost, right? So if you have that mindset to just say, we're going to innovate moving forward, and we're going to advise our brands on which technologies to leverage or test, especially when a lot of companies need to diversify their portfolio anyway. You can't just pick one solution and that's it. You have to diversify and say, I believe these are the five core areas of focus, whether it's like these publishers are using identity and privacy sandbox and ramp ID, and they're also testing clean rooms right now. And they also work with these brands who are mutual anyway. These are the kinds of things that they should be exploring, not just the traditional, who's my target audience? Let me reach out to send an RFP to this particular publisher and can you reach my audience and how, right? No. Have like an investigative call. Like talk about the real problems coming, right? Don't get in that like robotic like RFP mindset. Like how are you guys actually going to prepare for this future? It's coming in like 4 months.
Yeah.
So I would say agencies and brands need to have more of an advisory type of relationship and really start testing things. Otherwise, you're going to wait till the last minute and probably fail if you wait till the last minute.
Speaking of real challenges, you mentioned the Google Sandbox, and I think we've kind of glossed over it a little bit a couple of times in the conversation, but we have 1% deprecation in Q1, 5% coming, I think, September 27th, right? So it's material enough to get a sample size. Would love to hear what you've heard from your counterparts, coworkers, whoever it may be. What is the feedback been in this 1% deprecation? And are people worried about the 5% coming in September?
So that's the thing. I don't think 1% is enough.
Sure.
I would have preferred. So I actually had a conversation with the Sandbox team, or the Chrome team, I should say.
Okay.
And there's a lot of like legal hurdles they had to go through to up that rate like early on. But I think the 1% deprecation is not enough to get true findings. And that 1% doesn't necessarily hit every single publisher, right? It's 1% of the browser, like essentially,
right.
Like not 1% of each domain. So unfortunately, I departed Business Insider before we can test it. So I don't know how their tests are going or if they're testing it right now. But like I know Paul Bannister from Raptive has been very active in posting his results. And I know the results are still not great. And granted, Raptive is a very heavily programmatic, company, programmatic heavy company. And they're more suited to test cookie deprecation. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be a good transition, if that makes sense. I think there's gonna be a lot more failings than successes to start with, and revenue will be impacted. People just need to brace for that, and they should look at their baseline with Safari, for instance. Like, what are your CPMs on Safari, and like literally just go with that for your revenue forecast. And I think when it comes to testing, they need to open that window to 5% sooner than September, in my opinion. But like, you need more percentage to play around with. So one of the things that I was thinking about was, if you want people to test the cookie deprecation, give them the option. Like, I would hope Google would give them the option to say, if you want to increase your cookie list inventory to, let's say, 5% or 10%, we will get our learnings as Google, but we will pay you as if you're making money on a third-party cookie, so that there's incentive on both sides of willing and a willingness to test, because otherwise it's a one-sided, game. Like, if Google gets their learnings, but the publisher loses revenue as a result of those learnings, like, what incentive is there for publishers to want to test? Like, it's one of those, like, again, another double-edged sword. It's like, you want people to try it out, but you have to make it worth their while.
Fair.
Yeah.
As we wind down, I want to make sure we kind of give a nice TLDR to the episode. What's the one takeaway? I mean, I feel like we covered quite a bit of information here. What's the one takeaway you would ask a publisher or someone listening to either adhere to or, learn more about as a takeaway?
I would give two TLDRs. One, build a foundation ASAP. Like, you're running out of time. Like, not every publisher is going to survive the cookieless future, period.
Yep.
So be one of those survivors in that sense. Make sure you build a foundation set on identity. Make sure you have more direct relationships with reputable data providers in the industry. Make sure so you can do data enrichment in a much better and higher match rate type of scenario. Also, get more identifiers, right? Because alt IDs, emails, etc., like, these are going to be hugely important.
Sure.
And don't confuse identifiers with identity. it's like my identifiers are I have hazel eyes and brown hair, but that's not who I am. That's not my identity. Mm. They're just identifiers that kind of help find Anthony, right?
Right.
But like build a foundation where you truly understand who the users visiting your website are.
Yeah.
Then address those users as many ways as possible. And the second TLDR is just test, right?
Yep.
And ask all the hard questions. Like, I don't know why people are afraid to ask the hard questions. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not a game of like, I'm going to hurt your feelings by asking these questions. It's a game of we need to survive. So I have to ask these hard questions. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, you could be nice all the way through until you lose money and then everyone's mad at each other. You know? And then, you know, ask the hard questions. It's a real big change and a lot of fear around it. So if you don't get the answers you need, you're never going to get the answers, period. And then you're going to suffer for it. So yeah, that's my TLDR.
Yeah. As long as we all don't start fighting like they do on Love is Blind, I think we'll be okay.
Exactly.
Well, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you and hear your thoughts. And yeah, come back anytime.
Happy. I love talking. So just let me know. And thank you for having me. And yeah, we can do as many as you guys want.
Perfect. Careful what you wish for.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. And we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Pup Way podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star review. To see all the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode, head on over to thepubwaypodcast.com. This episode is brought to you by CTAG, the world's leading contextual advertising company. Contextual intelligence allows you to engage with consumers within their universe of interest on a cookie-free basis. By delivering ads into content, we capture users' attention faster and retain it longer. Learn more and reach out to us at ctag.com.